Hi, welcome to my podcast. I am Dr. Lauren Goodall. I am a clinical psychologist, and this is Psychology in Short. Before we start, I'd like to give a shout out to my sponsor, MD365Access.com. This is a Teladoc service that offers medical care immediately without leaving your home. So you have access to board-certified MDs that cover a variety of medical conditions, and it takes the wait out of the waiting room. For a monthly affordable fee, you and your family can get unlimited service with these medical doctors. And so this is available throughout the U.S., and their information is also on my website. And my website is drlaurengoodall.com. And exclusive to my listeners is a $40 discount for the first month's trial. So go to my website for more detailed information. Okay, today's topic is attachment. What is attachment? And this is a relationship basic 101. Attachment starts out of the gate with an infant and its mother, okay, or primary caregiver. But I'm going to say, for practical purposes, we're going to talk about the mother-child bond. And this research really got momentum in the 1970s. There was a look at what does attachment look like, what is its impact on a person's life. And it is the single most activity that will have the most profound psychological impact on your relationships and your friendships, your intimate relationships, that starts in one space, okay? And that is just in infancy and the experience a child has bonding with the parent. So John Bowlby came up with some attachment styles, and he gave some categories to it. And he came up with securely attached infants versus insecurely attached infants. Securely attached infants are pretty much what you would think. They're able to resource. They anticipate reaching, calling out to their parent, and their parent engages with them. Their needs are anticipated, that's emotionally and physically. The child's first experience is a sense of value in that system with that caregiver, with that nurturing mother, versus an insecure attachment where a child develops either an anxious response because that caregiver is inconsistent. Sometimes they respond to your crying, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have a coat, sometimes you don't. Sometimes there's timed food that you can anticipate. But these types of caregiver-child responses matter because they give a child a sense of value. And there's research that was done talking about long-term implications on self-esteem, okay, and how self-esteem is impacted by this first experience of attachment or being attended to and not being attended to. So there's an anxious style, and then there is an avoidance style, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but that is obviously going to have more impairment to it. But both of these are nonetheless categorized under insecure attachments. And so I'm going to back up a little bit and discuss where Bowlby got his research from, because it was a pretty rough space. He got his research from a psychoanalyst in the 40s named Renee Spitz. And Renee studied kids that were institutionalized and the effect of maternal deprivation. Okay, so we would call these orphanages, and they called them back in the day foundling homes. And these were structurally clean places. They were attended to by nuns and nurses, but considered, you know, the place for a drop off if a mother could not take care of her child. And this research, these infants were compared to mothers, to babies who were born to an incarcerated parent. Mom is in jail. She's in the penal system. And these babies were born there and had an opportunity to bond with the mother. And these, the penal system was not so clean as you can anticipate. Okay. But what's interesting about this study is initially the kids that were in the foundling homes had higher IQs. They were showing quicker intellectual processes and such. But over time, that fell off, okay? Because there is no emotional engagement in these places. They're structural, but no emotional or very, very limited. Child would scream and not be attended to. In those types of scenarios, the flip side was that the kids who were in the penal system were taken care of by the mother. The mother engaged with them. And these kids started off with lower IQs, but they did much better than the institutional places. Why? Because there was a mother that was attending to them that gave them a sense of value. And they found, which was really horrifying, that in the institutionalized place, the foundling home, or like an orphanage, so to speak, 37% of these babies died within 2 years. And there was nothing medically wrong with these kids. So their sense of their psychological well-being was so disturbed, it shut down their biological functions. It shut down their intellectual functions. So just the mere aspect of having an emotional regarded relationship, an emotionally a strong emotional attachment for comfort, for care, made the difference between doing well in life or literally babies can die without emotional care and emotional regard. So that was some pretty profound stuff. And so with that research in mind, there was also further research in the 70s done by Mary Ainsworth, and she was taking a lab situation where they introduced a stranger with a small child and how the small child responds to the stranger as mom leaves the room. You know, children who are securely attached will welcome the return of their mother and can reference, and they do well in terms of being better able to emotionally regulate because they have that trusting relationship. All right. Now, kids who had an avoidant type of attachment, that's like one of the worst. That means that, you know, this person's here, but they're really, really unreliable, or they don't really show much interest in me. I can't count on them physically. I can't count on them emotionally. And if an avoidant relationship, an avoidant attachment, what it looks like is these kids will go with anybody. And that is not a good thing. That means pretty much anything is about as good as what I got. Okay. Securely attached child isn't going to go with anybody. Okay. They are going to remain attached to that caretaker for emotional stability and physical and psychological well-being. So what this means and how this all matters is that in relationships, that we develop relationships, we have our own attachment styles. And we have to not only know what ours is, but also with the style of our partner, okay? And that matters because, say, for instance, an anxious attachment can be worked with. it exists because the caretaker was inconsistent and didn't always give the child regard or a sense of value. Maybe there were situational things going on. Mom was distracted and not enough attention went to this child. So this child develops some anxiety going into the world about their safety and about their sense of value. And as an anxious, if a person has an anxious attachment, you may be able to spot it in certain ways. These are people who, you know, if you go to text them, they're looking for an immediate response. Well, there's a reason. They're not trying to be difficult, but there's a reason where that comes from. They are constantly trying to navigate is, do I matter to you? Is our relationship important enough? So that gauge is constantly going on in the background. Some of the research says, hey, these persons may be more clingy, but I think they're more, I mean, that's a physically, yes, that's possible, but I always say look more at other things, like, you know, are they bombarding you with texts? You know, when they don't hear from you, are you getting multiple texts? That's going to tell you more about an anxious attachment space. So it's not just somebody who wants to be with you 24/7. It's more about, you know, when you don't hear from me, do I still exist? Or do you just assume I'm off running around with somebody else? Is your imagination going wild? Now, anxious attachments can be worked through. I always say, with an anxious attachment, you build a base, okay? And you build a base, not just with one person, but with multiple types of relationships, different friendships. So there's a supportive base. So the person's sense of well-being isn't hinged on an intimate relationship. So with anxiety, we build a base. And as you do that, you know, and as the consistency comes through a relationship, a lot of that behavior just falls off, okay? Because the person now knows where they stand. Does the anxiety disappear altogether? Probably not. Attachment is relatively stable. Means it's kind of like having a scar. And as you get older, you throw some makeup on it and you can cover it up or maybe even tattoo over it. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It is there and you have an awareness of it, but you work around it and you develop strategies that basically say, hey, I do matter and I do have resources and it is more than one person in my life. And my self-esteem will not come apart if my primary love interest is not available. And I can manage until I hear from this person and we can walk through that space. Okay. So that is one form of an insecure attachment, but it's very well founded. The person doesn't imagine it. It existed for a reason. And there is another form, which is the avoidant. And avoidant attachments are people who really have a hard time asking for help. These babies, these young children, found that their caretakers were just really fairly lousy. Couldn't be counted on for physical needs, couldn't be counted on for emotional needs. You know, you might as well go with the next best thing because, and the problem with all of that is it mirrors back to the child and makes the child feel like they don't matter. So the whole idea of being in a relationship is a pretty scary thing. One of the ways that you could see this play out is in those, you know, in a relationship where it is hot and heavy, and then it turns into the cat and mouse, and then all of a sudden you can't find this person, and you're like, what happened? Did I miss something? And now this person has commitment issues. And which really that comes from an avoidant space. That means like, okay, so if we're in a relationship, do I lose my sense of me? Because honestly, being in a relationship has never really worked for me. I can't find people reliable enough to have regard for me. And so I've got one foot in, one foot out, and it's going to be an issue throughout. And certainly with more of an avoidant personality, or avoidant attachment, I should say, you have to manage the pace. Anxiety, you build a base. Avoidance, you address the pace, okay? And understand where, at what point does the person start to feel engulfed, or fear of being engulfed, or fear of being controlled or taken over. That's not what somebody wants. So to them, they would rather reject you than give you an opportunity to reject them, because that's basically what they come to expect. When their fear is that I'm going to be rejected anyway, so I might as well just push them away before they push me away. So we get a lot of dysfunction in relationships due to these attachment styles that were wired in fairly early. And as I said, they can be worked on, but they are relatively stable. So you can see this play out in different relationships over time. The avoidant in particular is going to be more likely to self-sabotage. They can have a great thing going, and then all of a sudden they're self-sabotaging all over the place because they anticipate the lack of regard, the inability to ultimately trust a relationship. And the anxious attachment can also take on a controlling factor, and that can be problematic. You can have anxiety, and the way a person tries to get rid of their anxiety is to try to control for different facets. Where you're going to be, what we're going to do, that's not a good thing. Some people say, well, you know, she likes to do that stuff, I just let her. I'm more laid back. But it really isn't good for the relationship to have, even if anxiety is the root of that control, the anxiety, at some point, the person has to understand where they stand in the relationship and come to rely on that relationship. And if that relationship is not one that they can rely on in a fairly consistent way, with a basic way of being able to send a message and, you know, be able to wait if they don't immediately hear from their partner and be okay with it. It's not a big deal. That's the goal. The goal is moving out of an anxious space to a more secure space. And it does happen. And with good relationships, you will be able to build that and change some of that paradigm. So attachments do matter. And understanding where your partners come from with their attachments. And equally, when there is really poor attachment, which you're also going to see, is a lot of authority problems. You know, parents who are overly disciplined, overly strict, condescending towards their children. You can create a lot of reactive attachment disorders that way, because there is no good attachment. It's psychologically damaging. So these are some of the basic premises that exist out of the gate and why attachment really is critical. When you're raising a child, to have a person who is emotionally engaged, who does offer laughter, smiles, cuddles, security, physical security. And if for some reason that primary caretaker or mother is not in a good space, then you need to find somebody who is. Because those impacts are so profound psychologically throughout a person's life and have so much implication. So I would say that is the big thing, and understanding that level of emotional and regard gives us our sense of value in this world. That is our first sense of value. So it is really critical, psychologically speaking, to have these small children raised by people who can do that, who can offer that regard. And sometimes it's not parents. Sometimes it's grandparents who are going to do a better job. I don't care necessarily who does the job. It matters that that person who does the job has the psychological ability to be attentive and to have regard and to help build a self-esteem. And because that's going to be the template that helps a person stay on a course and feel safe in their life, physically, psychologically, and learn how to develop relationships with security as opposed to a chronic sense of insecurity. And that will develop a lot of psychological symptoms in life, such as anxiety and depression. They're well-rooted, okay? So that's why attachment matters. At this point, I think I'm going to close it up here. And thank you for joining me. And as always, you can leave some feedback on my website, drlaurengoodall.com. Thank you for joining me. And we'll see you at the next podcast.